Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Mel Valentin, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. Mel is a very special person coming in back again for a second installment of Fat Guys in the Movies. The reason he's so special is because he's, like me, one of the few people who is not at the San Diego Comic-Con this week.
Yeah, there's like five of us, I think. Actually, not there.
Everybody else in the geek world, internet, blogosphere, all that good stuff, is out at San Diego dressed up as orcs and elves and hobbits and stormtroopers and their grandmother's toenails and all that kind of
superheroes.
Stuff.
Superheroes.
To pay homage to all things geek. But since we're not there, we're not going to talk about that.
No. Although I do wonder if how many people are going to show up in Green Lantern costumes this year. There seemed to be a lot more last year, and then at WonderCon this year, which I was at, there were quite a few Green Lantern costumes. And some of them were really well done. But somehow after that movie, I don't think so.
I like Green Lantern.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to talk superheroes then.
well, trust me, we'll talk about Green Lantern in a little bit because I have certain things to say about another movie here. But anyways, before we get started and we talk to Mel and find out who he is and where he's, in case other people haven't heard of this, he's a legend. But just in case you haven't heard of him,
in my own mind,
get us at Fat Guys. What was that? In your own mind?
That's yes. True.
And apparently in mine. But yeah, you can go to fatguysinthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes, search Fat Guys in the Movies. We pop right up. You can go to Facebook, facebook.com/FGATM. You can go to email and hit us up on email, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. We don't have one of those, but we have a little bit of listener feedback that I want to address in the later segment. You can also catch me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/KevinCarr. And Mel, tell us who you are and what you do and why we should care.
I write about movies. I love writing about movies, and I've been doing it for going on 6-7 years now. I've written something like 1,300 reviews for initially Movie Vault. I've been writing for SF Station for 6 years, eFilm Critic, same time. Used to write for Cinematical, and I'm also writing now, just started writing for another site called VeryAware.com.
Wow.
So I'm all over the place.
You are way too qualified to be on this show. Well, good to have you back. You were on in like March, I think. It wasn't that long ago, actually.
It was a few months ago, yes.
Yeah, it wasn't too long ago because but I needed to have somebody who, like I said, I need to have somebody who wasn't at Comic-Con. So as I learned the last couple of years, everyone goes to Comic-Con.
Well, I've always wanted to go, and I think part of it for me is just my aversion to crowds, not just... I mean, there are always complaints about the number of people who don't shower or shave after a few days, plus the heat of San Diego.
That's true.
But WonderCon is, I think, probably my speed. I think finally I have to admit that 4 days of just hanging out with geeks and movies and comic books, as much as I love all that stuff, just might be too much.
Comic-Con is a bit overwhelming. It is. The crowds, they're awful. I mean, in general, they're good people. If you're going to cram 100,000 people into one building, you could do worse than that. The worst thing you're going to have deal with is some people who haven't showered. And somebody did get a knife pulled or a pen. Somebody got stabbed last year.
They got stabbed in the eye area. The original report said in the eye, and I kept reading jokes about it on Twitter. Like, wait a second, if someone loses their eyesight, that's not a joke. But
yeah,
I think it was a stabbing in the eye area. But
yeah, but it was with a pen. It wasn't a real knife.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Anything.
Proving once again that pen is mightier than the sword.
Yikes.
Go on.
Oh, I was going to say, you know that there were people already lined up and waiting early this afternoon for the Twilight panel tomorrow.
Wow. That's like the only big movie that's there. Except there's Captain America. They're doing promotion for that. And Cowboys and Aliens, I think they're doing a screening. But
those are, one's coming out Friday and the other one's next week. So
yeah, it's like Twilight's like the only major studio. And even then, Summit is like arguably not much of a major studio. It's the Twilight studio with a couple other movies.
And I think it's the last year that they're there, too, at least with that kind of presence, because we'll have the two parts of Breaking Dawn.
It'll all be wrapped up before next year.
Yes, that's the hope anyway for a lot of people.
Please, oh God, yeah, they're gonna have prequels. Lord. Anywho, oh hey, one thing I do want to mention. We haven't mentioned this on the show. For friends, a friend of the show, Fozzie Bear, who you will recognize from guest host and that sort of shenanigans. We will be doing a live show in New York City at the Indian Road Cafe on August 6th. That's Saturday, August 6th, in Manhattan. It's very north Manhattan. So if you go to Facebook and you search Late Night Chat Room, you will find it. And or you can go to my page, which is facebook.com/ Fat Guys in the Movies, or facebook.com/FGATM, and it will link you there. We're going to be doing basically a live podcast, sort of Tonight Show, sort of talk show style. We're going to be interviewing some people who do paranormal research. We're going to be interviewing, we're going to have a comic. We got somebody who plays ukulele, believe it or not, amazingly. And we're going to, of course, have me and Fozzie doing our sort of, I guess, our shot at sort of hosting something. So if you're in New York or you're near New York, come to the Indian Road Cafe on August 6th. I think it starts at 11 at night. So we'd love to have you there. It's free. Just buy some drinks and you should be good.
Wow. I want to hear it.
It's a bit like of a drive. We will eventually post it online, but you can hear it early and see us live and watch my beautiful presence.
Oh, so there's a video component to this.
No, you won't. No. We'll post an audio, but if you show up, you will be able to see us.
Okay.
That's how it works in real life. It's a bit of a drive for you, though, isn't it?
Yeah, just 2,500 miles.
It's just nothing.
You get there in three days, easily.
3 days? Oh, come on. That's lightweight stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways, first movie we're going to talk with, we're just basically going to talk real quick about it and then go into the next segment. We'll finish it up. But that is Friends with Benefits, that opens this week, and it stars Mila Kunis and Justin Timberlake having sex without love, just like Hollywood has intended.
I just feel like we should chill for a while.
I think we should take a break.
You're breaking up with me?
It's not you.
Of course it's me.
It's me. I don't like you anymore. You said that I was your soulmate.
I did? When?
When we were at that bed and breakfast having sex.
You know, that doesn't...
That doesn't what?
Count.
I'm done with the relationship thing.
I'm emotionally unavailable.
I'm emotionally damaged.
You know what I'm saying?
No emotions, just sex.
So I guess we should just start.
Bedroom.
What's wrong with the couch?
The bedroom has better light.
All right, we got a minute, and I know you haven't seen this yet, because I haven't seen it, and I think Screen Gems decided to screen it in the same night as Captain America, like throughout the country.
Correct, yes.
Are you at all interested in this?
I am, and I guess a lot of it has to do just with Mila Kunis herself. And
Mila Kunis.
She's who she is, you know. She's
pretty, and she has nice breastilages.
Yes, and I think she actually has some good comic timing, maybe not great, that she developed on the 7, 10, 12 seasons of that 70s show.
Eight seasons of that 70s show, thank you very much.
Really? That long? Okay.
Yeah, 8 seasons, yeah. And 7 if you don't count the one that didn't have Topher Grace in it.
Yeah, I don't count.
Last sort of redheaded stepchild. You know, Cousin Oliver season.
Right. Wasn't he trying to have a movie career around that time?
Everyone was trying to. You know what, though? We got to go to a break here. When we come back, we'll talk about the kids from that 70s show and who actually made it with a career.
Awesome.
Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are talking about Friends with Benefits, and you were talking about, what were you going to talk about? You were talking about Mila Kunis. Oh, that 70s show.
Yes.
Mila Kunis went on to have a career in film. Ashton Kutcher, of course, went on to have a career in film.
Although he's back to television because his career in film is kind of sunk, I think.
Well, I mean, he had the Killers thing, but he does okay for himself. He's probably arguably the most successful of the bunch.
Yes.
Everybody went on to do some film of some sort. You had the girl who played Donna, what's her name, Laura Prepon. She did a couple films.
Did she really?
Here and there. Then she had, she did the show, I think she did one called
Was she in a horror
not
movie?
Not Slacker, something? But Slackers or something like that. It was some late name like that. Jason Schwartzman was in it. She shows up, and she was in, she did like a guest spot on, and then she did some TV. She did October Road and stuff like that. Then you had the guy who played Hyde. What's his name?
Yes.
Danny Pierce. He showed up in Superman Returns.
He was in Superman Returns?
Yeah, he played one of like the Luther's henchmen, along with Cal Penn.
Wow. Oh.
Cal Penn, wasn't that?
Yeah, you're right. Cal Penn, he had like no dialogue, which was really shocking because I kept expecting Cal Penn to actually speak throughout the movie. And he never does. Apparently, he did have some lines of dialogue that were cut. But Danny Masterson, yes. And he was on, I think, an episode.
Danny Masterson, yeah.
White Collar.
He just did White Collar not too
yes,
long ago.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Which was he and his brother in real life played brothers.
Was that really his brother? Oh, I didn't know that.
No, they had the same last. They had the same last name. And they looked together, and they looked similar. That is the level of research I do. I didn't even look it up on Wikipedia.
I, you know, honestly, I just assumed they looked alike because they were picked. Not that they were actually siblings.
Well, they had the same last name, so that's good enough for me.
That
and it's not like they were named Smith or something like. I mean, and it was spelled the same. So
Christopher Masterson. Yes.
Yeah. Right. There was also Fez, the guy who played Fez, Wilmer Valderrama.
Yes.
He's done a couple films. He did Fast Food Nation. He was recently in the
Larry
ever-present and huge Larry Crown.
I almost didn't recognize him until he started speaking, and I'm like, oh, it's Fez. And that's really his accent. Okay.
What was his catchphrase? What was his catchphrase? Fez's catchphrase from That 70s Show.
Wow, I'm not sure. I'm drawing a blank.
I forget. Oh, yeah. I said good day. I said good day. Don't you remember that?
You know, I don't know why. I actually loved That 70s Show for about the first 3-4 seasons.
I like That 70s Show. The last season was terrible when they had, like, Seth Meyers or somebody take over.
I stopped watching. You know, I was such a big Topher Grace fan. No, it was less that and more the fact that the show just got stale and was tired, and it was time to retire it, and they just weren't ready to do that quite yet.
I don't know. I stuck through it for the all. Like I said, the only season I thought was really weak was the last one. You know, even Red, the guy who played Red Foreman, whatever his name is, Kurtwood Smith. He was in RoboCop.
Oh yeah, well yeah, that was a good start for him.
But anyways, and Mila Kunis, of course, is in Friends with Benefits. I'm curious to see this because that movie No Strings Attached was so awful. This has to be better.
You hope. Well, and it'd
have to work to be worse than Friends with No Strings Attached, with Ashton Kutcher, of course.
Of course. Well, and the weird thing there too is that we have two films within months of each other with practically the exact same premise. It's hard to say what differences there are, obviously, since neither one of us has seen Friends with Benefits. But
yeah, I don't know. I think I think that here's the thing. I like Justin Timberlake as an actor.
As do I.
I think he's actually a fantastic actor. I think he's got a great comedic timing. So I'm curious to see how he works out in this movie.
Yeah.
And Mila Kunis, I'm hoping to see at least shots of her in her underwear.
I think we will be rewarded with that.
Oh, awesome.
I heard some side boobage, too.
Ooh, really?
That was as far as we'd get with her, yes.
Bing, 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 bing. Well, you know, I don't know what I was going to say. Anyway, it does not get a preemptive suck because they did screen it. They just screened it on the same night as a bigger movie that will probably be more successful. So I can't give it a preemptive suck. But
I can't either. But I am disappointed that the two big movies of the week were screened on a Wednesday, middle of the week, which is usually not a good sign. And at the same time,
I'm not surprised. It's Screen Gems. Screen Gems generally doesn't like critics to see their movies. anyways,
probably for a good reason.
No, they don't. True story. They scheduled the screening. One of the last big Screen Gem releases was Country Strong.
I remember. Awful. I reviewed that. Yes, I thought.
And they moved the date to conflict with the awards dinner of our local critic organization. They actually had it on a different date, and they moved it to that date. Now I don't know if that was meant to happen, but after seeing the movie, It probably was.
Because I'm pretty sure you're right. I think they changed it from a Tuesday to a Thursday. And I remember being bummed and upset about that because that meant I had to write my review that same night and send it in.
Yeah, it was awful. Without
any notice. Yeah, it was not a good film. Not a good film. Right. And I guess
Hopefully, this one will be better. But let's talk about the other one we've got. That is Captain America. Chris Evans stars as the popular Marvel character as he's who is a super soldier who fights against the enemies of the country.
Our goal is to create a new breed of super soldier.
When you brought a 90-pound asthmatic onto my army base, I let it slide.
I am looking for qualities beyond the physical.
You win wars with guts.
Whatever happens, stay who you are. Not just a soldier, but a good man.
Hydra is the Nazi deep science division, led by Johann Schmidt.
He thinks he's a god, and he's willing to blow up half the world to prove it.
First crack, you go, Mel. Tell me what you thought of this one.
I came really close to loving it, which I guess shouldn't be a surprise because I am a big comic book fan from way back, and one of my favorite characters was indeed Captain America, it was probably one of the first comic books I picked up, besides X-Men or Captain America, Avengers. So the relationship between Captain America, Tony Stark, Iron Man, that was all there in my formative years, and I was more of a Marvel zombie, as they call them, versus a DC kid, although I liked and loved DC. And I still think Dark Knight is the best superhero movie that's been made so far in our entire history in the last 100.
Even better than Catwoman?
I would say just slightly better. But yes, barely beats it. But Captain America, I think, ends the superhero summer on a good note. After the disappointment that was Green Lantern, I almost said Green Lantern.
I'm going to take issue with that because here's the thing: I like Green Lantern. Let me just say that you can go back and listen to my review of it. But when I saw Captain America, I was left. I liked it, but I didn't love it, and I felt there was an emptiness to it, and. All the problems I had with Captain America were the problems people had. I heard people expressing about Green Lantern. Super corny. It's corny. It is so corny.
It's a cornball movie, but it's I think you can give it a pass because of the time period, because it's set in the 1940s.
That's a cheat. No,
you can't. How's it a cheat?
Because people weren't that corny back then.
Were corny. Films themselves. So this is not necessarily a true representation of 1940s, but the way. Film made during the 1940s portrayed that period. So I think it's kind of true to that.
I think Joe Johnston uses nostalgia the way people are accusing J.J. Abrams of using nostalgia with Super 8.
Which I hated.
You hated Super 8?
Oh, I thought it was an absolute mess. I can't believe that Steven Spielberg was even involved with that. I think it's an embarrassment to everyone involved.
Wow.
One tonal shift after another, sympathy for an alien monster. I rarely have left the movie feeling so incredibly disappointed as I did. Green Lantern I had some concerns about, and I think a lot of the problems with Green Lantern that I had were that it's just a premise that maybe doesn't translate particularly well, and maybe they went with a little bit too much humor and weren't sure how to approach that. And yes, we've seen so much of the superhero origin story over and over again, so I felt kind of stale.
You needed to do that. Same thing Captain America. You had to tell where it came from. I mean, You had to pay. And the thing is, like, people complain about, like, Green Lantern. They complain about the suit and made it look goofy. Well, guess what? Chris Evans looked goofy as heck when he was not Chris Evans and some scrawny kid with Chris Evans' face on it. That did not quite register well. There's also this whole... There's this scene in the middle where it should have been this awesome action sequence, and it turns into a weird little montage. That
was a comment afterward that we had that it was a movie heavy on the montage, which was kind of bizarre. It was like every time, like, wait, didn't we just get out of a montage and we had like one exposition field scene? Back to the montage.
Yeah. So these are not things that made me dislike the movie, but I'm saying I'm pointing out I found that it had the exact same flaws that Green Lantern did. I liked them both. But I don't get the love the love that critics are giving this film versus the hate they got for Green Lantern. It's like when the Matrix movie, when the Matrix sequels came out, and everyone kind of dumped on them because they had bad special effects and overly long and things went on too long. But then loved Lord of the Rings, and I'm like, wait, they have the same flaws.
And I'm not I. Yes. Well, I hated the Matrix sequels.
I'm gonna actually interrupt you here because we gotta go to a break.
Okay.
We can finish when we get back.
Yes, sounds good.
Hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. Want to get right back into talking about Captain America. And I brought up I brought this up very unfair of me, bring it up in the last like 10 seconds. comparing the Matrix sequels to the Lord of the Rings movies, and how they one got hated and one got praised, where I felt that they kind of had the same flaws and the same strength. So go on. You can rebut that.
Well, I can't quite rebut it in the sense that I'm not a Lord of the Rings lover. Mm-hmm. I like them considerably. A lot of it has to do with the technical craft involved on every level. But I think one of the weaknesses of the Lord of the Rings movies are the characters. The characters are really one-dimensional outside of their relationships to each other. And, yeah, there's a lot of self-indulgence, overindulgence that happens with the stories and adapting them, that just feels weighted down, that there is too much repetition in them, that they could have actually been more streamlined. And yes, I will eventually buy the extended editions of Lord of the Rings at some point. But I didn't rush out to get them, even though I did earlier. When I rewatched them and watched the extended editions, I realized I liked them less the third or fourth time through.
Yeah,
they just didn't grab me on an emotional level the way I expected them to. And then with the Matrix sequels, I just felt, well, at least with Lord of the Rings, you felt there was one long continuous story and it was split into three parts. The Matrix sequels, it felt like they didn't know what they were doing in the second and third ones and ended up bringing the Neo character back to an earlier point in the story. So when the second one starts, he's having all these self-doubts. Like, wait a second, didn't he just declare himself Superman at the end of the first one? And now he's back into self-doubting mode. And he's such a passive character throughout the second and third films that I just have a clear recollection of sitting in a movie theater with the audience when he finally looks up after sitting around doing not much of anything, saying, I know what I need to do. And it's taken him almost two movies to go, I'm going to Machine City. Like, great, glad you finally realized that. But I just think the Wachowski brothers needed more time to work on the scripts, to get him more in line. And I don't, you know, they had the hero's journey for the first film, so they had a template. In a very clear way, if you go back and look at all of sort of the basic elements of the hero's journey, they hit every single one of them. And then when they had to do the sequels, they weren't sure where to go. I really felt there was a lot of uncertainty with the character, with the story, secondary characters, and they just didn't. They were sort of making it up as they went along, probably while they were filming.
They were
right, but I don't feel like.
Let me give you this. I will tell you this. You're the first person I've ever heard who has complained about the Matrix sequels and actually gave a compelling argument from a character and story perspective.
And
this is what frustrated me, you know, eight years ago or whenever when they came out, was everyone was complaining because the special effects were overblown, the special effects didn't look realistic, it went on too long, the action sequences just went on and on and on and on. And I remember after the Matrix Reloaded came out, they go, it didn't end. And I'm like, at the same time, people were praising Lord of the Rings. And I'm like, wait a minute. Those special effects didn't look fantastic. Some of them look great, but some of them look like really crappy.
Yeah.
The sequences went on way too long. And none of them ended until you got to the last movie, which had enough endings for five movies.
Yeah, which was too many. Yes.
So, yeah. So, I mean, and that's the frustration I feel about Captain America and Green Lantern. I liked both movies pretty equal. I kind of like Green Lantern more because the things that people like, the humor in Green Lantern, that didn't bother me because I felt it was skewing for a younger audience. And I think it's vacuous for a 30-year-old to be like, you didn't make this movie adult enough for me. And you're like, well, it's got to go for a wider audience, and that's fine. Because not everything needs to be or should be The Dark Knight.
No,
but
true.
I felt like, you know, like I said, the effects broke down in Green Lantern at times. The effects really broke down in Captain America. Some points look great, but some of them look... There's a scene where he's like jumping through like a warehouse, and it just looked terrible. It looked like Blade 2 at that point. But I was okay with that because it's just a fun, stupid superhero movie. And I thought the whimsical parts of it, you know, with his relationship with Haley Atwell's character, and there's a scene where this girl, the secretary's kind of flirting with him and he's all uncomfortable. It seemed really out of place. It takes this really draggy part in the second act. Again, a lot of the same problems with Green Lantern. But I liked both movies. I mean, I liked Captain America. I thought it was fun. I thought the 3D conversion was one of the worst I've seen in a long time.
I took off my glasses several times, barely noticeable. Yeah. I could have watched most of the film without it. And you're right, there was just really no reason for it. And I just think studios need to stop. Either they film it in 3D, or they spend more time and money, or have directors who are really directing with an eye toward depth. And it just doesn't seem like a lot of directors are doing that.
The conversion for Harry Potter looked gorgeous. It looked fantastic, I thought. But this one, I just thought, look, this one was, I think the last movie that had a 3D conversion this bad was My Soul to Take.
Which I didn't see, yes.
You didn't miss much.
No, I heard. And that wasn't screened for critics, too, so it wasn't screened for critics, I didn't feel like paying for it, and then never caught up with it on DVD.
My eyes actually did start to sting a little bit, just from strain, which almost never happens. The only other movie that it had ever happened to was My Soul to Take.
I had a little bit of that with Harry Potter, but...
Really?
Just slight. But I also didn't think it was necessary there, and it felt out of place, primarily because part one wasn't in 3D. And it just felt like they're really one big movie, and it's a 276-minute movie split in half, kind of unevenly, where I think, you know, a lot of talk, navel gazing in the first half, a lot of action in the second half. One's in 2D, one's in 3D. And I think they needed to do a one or the other decision. But
it's just paying off for
her. Oh God, yes.
It's going to make $1.5 billion.
And I definitely felt the closure and, you know, the payoff was all there. Emotional, narrative, dramatic, it was all there, perfect. So I was happy with the way they ended the series. But back to Captain America, my main issues were, I think, actually the bookend scenes. I almost felt like they didn't belong there and they could have been done in the Avengers film. That's actually what I expected to happen. But I realized they were doing that for the audiences who are not familiar with the character and his backstory, and having the ending that they would have otherwise had without the bookend probably would have confused a lot of people. Even if you throw in a little message saying, you know, he'll next be up in the Avengers. So they were just...
Which you know he's going to be in it, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And the thing is, and this is, again, something with... I heard, again, going back to a Green Lantern comparison, I know a lot of people are like, well, they had all this explanation and all this stuff, and they threw so much at you. And I'm like, well, that's Green Lantern. I mean, that's... And you can't just expect... You can take somebody who knows nothing about superhero movies, walk him into a Superman movie or a Batman movie, and they'd be like, I get it. This guy can fly, and he's got superpowers. Or, I get it. This guy dresses up as a bat, and he beats the tar out of criminals.
Yes, I
get that. You know, Spider-Man, he's like a spider. There we go. No more explanation is needed. Green Lantern, be like, wait, he's got this power ring, and he goes to space, and he has the willpower, and wait, yellow doesn't work, and what the... You have a certain amount of due diligence you have to do with that. Same thing with Captain America. You have to say, okay, well, he's superpowered, but he's sort of old-school superpowered, where he's not like Superman, but he's got this... He's just really, really... He's like a super soldier, but, like, not in the Kurt Russell soldier...
right.
Way. So, but overall, I liked Captain America. I think this has actually been I liked all superhero movies this summer. I liked Thor. I liked X-Men. I liked Green Lantern. I liked this one.
So. Yeah, I was slightly let down by Thor, but I think because they were trying to cram two storylines in one, and it didn't always work. Didn't mesh particularly well.
It was sort of like the Green Lantern thing. You had to go through this due diligence and explain all this. Yeah,
and I felt that was a little bit better. Handled in Thor versus, and plus there was a lot of conflict that was going on in Asgard, whereas it just seemed there was a lot of hanging around, not doing much of anything on Oa in Green Lantern. But I was actually talking about that with someone earlier tonight, that maybe Green Lantern was just given the premise and the convoluted backstory, all those elements that you have to get across to an audience unfamiliar with it, that it was bound to bog a film down. And make it hard to digest.
I think there was a perfect storm of problems that just pissed off fanboys. The going through all that backstory, plus going for the younger audience and the whimsical, humorous nature, plus Blake Lively, plus a little bit, a lot of CGI, just kind of pissed everybody off. And then it was in 3D, and then people tend to just hate on 3D, and then they hate on the movie. But I'm like I thought the Captain America 3D was terrible.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Yes,
that doesn't mean the movie was bad.
No, well, I think part of the problem too is so much of Green Lantern took place in space and on Oa, so everything was CG, you know. And a lot of it unfortunately looked unfinished. You know, there was more detail in some parts than others, so that kind of the blending didn't work particularly well. So I think that was a problem. And I think
I think what they were running into was Oa is such an artificial planet. It's not like Tron, which you can be like completely inside the computer, and it's not like, because I thought Tron and like Avatar were two polar opposites. Avatar was all organic. Tron was completely, you know, it was MacBook.
Right. You know? Inorganic, yes.
Yeah. Whereas Oa was organic because it was rocks, but it was not real and everything. But it was obviously not real, and it was all green screen. I do think that there's a backlash in people that are just getting tired of seeing overdone special effects. But there's no other way to do Oa. How else would you do Oa?
No, you're right. I just think that what they ended up putting on screen just wasn't strong enough quality-wise. Yeah. And there was a rush, and there was you know, a lot of reports about how unfinished the effects were, and how the trailer came out so late, for primarily because of that, and that they were just throwing gobs of money at effects houses to finish the effects, and I think that played into it, you know. And some of the effects look kind of ugly, unfortunately, I think.
But Captain America overall, you enjoyed it. You didn't love it, but you liked it.
Outside of a couple minor flaws, I would say very close to loving it. And I have to probably take, since I just saw it tonight, the critical distance isn't there that I probably need in a day or two to figure out, you know, separate my inner 8-year-old picking up the Captain America comic book and really getting a kick out of it. And I also had an older cousin who was a big comic book fan, self-taught, and he did pinups. You just threw out a character and he would do pinups, and one of his favorite characters was Captain America.
Yeah.
So he just had these magnificent pinups in his room, and he gave me a couple.
You I say wish pinups. I'm thinking of Betty Page. I'm thinking of Captain America and his real, like, little short shorts.
well, that's actually, you know, if it's just a single character, that's what they generally call them in comic book parlance.
Yeah, you're talking to me.
Yes.
I'm just this pervy boy over here.
But Captain America, and I thought they did a really solid job of the costume. And not making it too silly. The silly costume was the one he was wearing for propaganda purposes,
which was supposed to be silly,
right? It was,
which is the original costume,
right? And I was gonna say, and it's very close to the comic book version. And then they really outfitted it so it looked more realistic, more durable, usable. You know, whether he did it himself, and then later on when they outfitted him with it. So, and you're
overthinking that way too much. Yeah. Did he do it? Then who sewed it together?
Right. And Howard Stark. And for once, I didn't mind the connection to the larger Marvel universe that they've been trying to do in all the films. I thought it was really mishandled in Iron Man 2. It just ended up taking up too much time and too much time away from Stark, the main story.
Well, but the thing with that with Iron Man 2 is everyone wants this. But again, look, growing up reading Marvel comics, you're like, this is unnecessary to me. But somebody who's never read this stuff, you can't just suddenly throw together an Avengers movie. Iron Man 2 was all the setup for the Avengers. There was no way to get that out of the way except for taking up time in some movie. Because if you look at it, you've got arguably Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Hulk, or the Incredible Hulk, Thor, and Captain America. You had five movies to do all the setup for the Avengers.
And I think they did it, actually, my issues aside with Thor, I thought they did it particularly well in Thor.
Okay.
And because they did have it integral to S.H.I.E.L.D. capturing, you know, finding the Thor's hammer and him landing there. So there was sort of an integral organic connection between what was happening in the larger Marvel universe with S.H.I.E.L.D. and Thor. And I felt with Captain America, because of the World War II setting, that helped it too. That you didn't have to deal with S.H.I.E.L.D. or the other characters, you know, because they're in the future. But you still had, you know, an element that does tie to Thor, which was the Cosmic Cube, Tesseract.
Official fat guy is great. Sucks, rocks, kind of sucks, what is it?
Wait, I'm sorry. Give me those categories again, quickly.
Well, it either rocks or it sucks. You can also say kinda. Kinda rocks or kinda sucks.
Oh, I'll go with rocks. Yeah. Again, minor issues aside, rocks.
Yeah, I'm gonna say kinda rocks. Yeah. Just because it wasn't as there was an emptiness to it that not everybody agrees with me on, but it did. There was just sort of something there that something it was just missing something. It was missing paprika or whatever, you know, in the soup. So anyway, let's move on to box office. Of course, Harry Potter won last weekend, broke every single record except,
It didn't break?
Yeah, it was like, I think it didn't break the biggest Saturday record.
Right, that's right.
I think, but it broke everything else.
It's still Spider-Man 2, I believe.
I think
for Saturday record.
Yeah.
But it still broke. I mean, The Dark Knight, inflation adjusted. But once you start doing with the whole inflation adjusted,
then well, Dark Knight. Inflation adjusted, Doctor or Goldfinger beats it.
Right, right. Then you have to do it for every other film.
Well, and this it irritates me when they did, because for a long time they didn't do it. They just the biggest movie ever, you know, Titanic had this many. And then a lot of people were saying over the time that being like, well, wait a minute, adjust it for inflation. And then when Avatar came out and everyone was like, oh, it beat these records, but not by attendance. It's not the highest attended movie ever. And now what they do is they use that box office inflation type thing, but they only look back only a couple of years. Right. They're like, it didn't beat Pirates 2 if you adjust for inflation. I'm like, shit, it didn't beat Gone with the Wind if you adjust for inflation either.
Well, I would like that actually sort of as a standard category.
Yeah.
With tickets sold. But even then, that's somewhat deceptive. Because the population has grown so much.
The population has grown. The number of movie houses have grown. The way movies are marketed now have grown. I mean, Gone with the Wind, part of the reason that has made so much money is because it was in the theaters for like 87 years.
And they would re-release it every few years, too. Yeah. And
Star Wars, the same thing. They release Star Wars every year for like the first 5 years it was out.
And I saw Star Wars a month after it came out and then a year later in theaters. And in between there, I saw it several other times. But it was just remarkable that the following summer, it was still in theaters, still playing. Yep. And you know,
and people were still going to see it,
too. Yes, yeah, it was packed. Oh, I knew
because you didn't have the internet. You didn't have cable with 5,000 channels. And you didn't have internet. And you didn't have Netflix.
And you didn't have
even have VHS back then.
Right, and you didn't have the prediction. Or, yeah, the knowledge that it would come out in another format in 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
If you didn't see it theatrically.
You didn't know VHS was coming. You didn't know VHS was coming.
Right. Well, then you'd have to wait for a TV showing.
Which
could be several years later, and it would obviously be cut down due to commercials.
Oh, I think it was like the mid-80s by the time they actually put Star Wars on television. Because I actually remember watching it. It was a big, big deal. I think it was something like 83. It was something like that. It was like years after it came out.
So after the Star Wars special, the Christmas special.
Oh yeah, I watched the Star Wars holiday special.
I did too. Yes, I did too.
Yep. Yeah. I was seven. So what?
We can blame our youth on that one. I can blame my younger sister who became a Star Wars fan because of me. So she'd watch anything Star Wars related.
Yeah. Transformers was down to like 20 million or whatever. It took a huge hit, but partly because it lost all its 3D screens, a lot of its premium screens and IMAX and stuff to Harry Potter. And I think it's going to dwindle from this point on. I mean, Harry Potter made like $18 million on Monday, so wow. Transformers is taking backseat to that as the event movie. The question is, do you think that Captain America is going to beat Harry Potter this weekend?
I would say no. I'm not usually big on box office winners predictions, but
yeah.
I would say Harry Potter, since it's the last film, this is the people's chance to see it one more time. And I'm not the biggest Harry Potter fan. I read the first 5 books and then just stopped. And I'm actually reading.
Why didn't you just finish the last two at
that point? Well, at that point, the movies were coming out. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to read an 800 page book. And actually I just started reading the last book. And just to see how it measures up with the two parts of the Deathly Hallows, but the last part was one I'd actually see again. I'd pay to see, and I think I can't pay a higher compliment to a movie than that. That after it was over, I'd say I could see this again.
Well,
and I think a lot of people are going to do it.
Yeah. Well, if you go by numbers, if this thing drops even just 60%, which is huge, it's still going to be making $70 million.
Yeah. And I can't see Captain America making more than 70. I think it's probably going to be in the 50.
Captain America, 40 million tops.
Really? I was thinking 50.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. No, I'm thinking 40. You know, honestly, the number that came to head, $42,850,000. That's how much it's going to make. Put a pin in that and put that on your bulletin board, because that's what I think it's going to be. I think Captain America is going to do well, but honestly, I don't think it's going to be smashing, because there's a lot of stuff out there right now, and there's not a whole lot to differentiate it. And we've already had three superhero movies. You know, regardless of what you thought about Green Lantern, you still had Thor and X-Men. So, I mean, it's still a crowded superhero summer.
So you think there might be a little bit of the superhero fatigue?
I think so. Well, but we got that Thor made 50-some million, I think, its first weekend. And X-Men, same thing, right on that. And Green Lantern, even less. And I don't even think that lower number for Green Lantern was because of the reviews. I just think people are, okay, well, superhero fatigue is a great way to say it.
I'm hopeful it's not, but one question I have about Captain America, unlike Thor and Iron Man, is that they can do their own standalone movies. But since you're bringing back Captain America to the present, he's not that particularly interesting as a modern day character. You know, he's out of time. He's time lost, or whatever the phrase
he's
is.
He's less super.
Right, right. And after you have him wandering around, you know, and gawking at modern technology and, you know, modern ways, can you build a whole film around that in modern times? I don't know if you can. I mean, I like the idea of him being part of the Avengers, because he is, in the comic book's history, an integral part. And his relationship with Tony Stark is also key.
Well, here's the other thing. This is a huge hurdle for Captain America. I'm real curious. I'm very curious to see how it does overseas.
Yes.
Because it's a really rah-rah pro America movie. Yeah.
But it's World War II. It's a good war.
Yeah. It's World War II. But even then, you're right. But I mean, it's really flag waving, and that's great. I'm all for patriotism. I just don't know how well that's going to play, you know, in Iran when.
Will it get released there?
I think they're going to rename it. They're going to release it as the Great American Satan.
Yes. Yes.
Captain American Satan.
And the Red Skull. And the Red Skull is actually the hero.
Yeah. That's good.
Just turn.
Yeah. But even then, I mean, I'm curious as how it's going to play in Germany. I'm curious how it's going to play in Japan. I'm curious how it's just going to play in just the Middle East in general. You know, I mean, I'm Europe. I think Europe's going to give it its due no matter what, because again, like you said, it's World War II, and that's where everyone was aligned. But yeah, I don't see it doing big box office numbers. It's not, you know, it's sort of like if you look like Michael Bay, you look at the Transformers. Transformers is doing well overseas, but it's not doing ridiculously well overseas. His movies do better. They do well on both in America and overseas, but they're more evenly split between the two, as opposed to like a Roland Emmerich, like 2012, which did like 200 million here and like 800 million overseas.
Or Pirates 4 was very similar. Yeah. Which is really remarkable that it would cross $1 billion when I think it's only made 232 million the last time I tracked in the US.
I think it's made almost... Here you're quoting full numbers there, Mel. You got your Google open.
I don't. No. That was just one of those examples that I was really surprised at the imbalance.
That was Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp, just for some reason, he could be in The Farting Farmer, and it would make $1 billion.
Well, he wasn't a tourist.
Dude, did you look at the numbers, the international numbers for The Tourist?
I did not. It didn't do well nationally, but
it did well overseas.
Did it really?
It did well. It did fine. I think like the last Johnny Depp movie that didn't do well is like Dr. Parnassus, because he was in it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I wouldn't count that as his film. Wow.
But if you say his movie, I mean, it's like you're talking like The Astronaut's Wife is like the last crappy performance he's done. I mean, he's the reason that Alice in Wonderland did $1 billion. It has nothing to do with Tim Burton and 3D or Alice in Wonderland. It had to do with Johnny Depp.
And Mia Wasikowska?
Yes. Yeah. Whatever her name is. No.
Which I interviewed her for.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Is she super cute in real life?
She is. She's also short.
Really? Well, she looks tall.
She's the one that surprised me. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I also did, and I did that for Jane Eyre, and she was really charming. And
how tall is she?
I would say she's probably no more than 5'4".
She's more than 4 feet tall. She's a miniature. Did she not eat the cake that made her grow after shooting Alice in Wonderland?
But I think just the same thing. I expected her to be about 5'7", 5'8", based on her proportions and the way she was photographed on Alice in Wonderland. So I was kind of surprised that she wasn't as tall.
No, even like the kids are all right. She doesn't look short in that.
No. So I guess you have short actors around her.
Yeah.
No one else around.
I remember I met the Cats of High School Musical, and it looked like you'd washed them in hot water, and then and you shouldn't have, because they were just miniature people. They weren't, and it's not even like that. It's not even that, like, as Zac Efron's really that short. It's just they all look tiny. I don't know. It's that illusion of television. It's that Tom Cruise effect.
Right. Well, what's her name? Saoirse Ronan, who was in Hannah.
Oh, Atonement. Yeah.
I interviewed her too, and I swear I saw somewhere that she's listed 5'6", and she's not that tall. But the interesting thing is, of course, she's playing this kick-ass heroine who's a teenager.
Yeah.
Well, and she has to, them. But she's fighting all these guys, and I'm like, they were all really short. They all had to be around her height because, you know, the way she shot, it's full, you know, full frame, head to toe. So
they had the midgets come out and fight her.
It's like, wow, none of the stuntmen must have been over 5'6", 5'7".
Wow, that's amazing.
But you know, that helps. It gives you the whole proportionality thing, and you end up thinking she's taller. You think
she got the entire Tom Cruise stuntman lines.
Very likely.
Let's move on. Well, let's talk about a couple teasers that came out. First of all, do you like teaser trailers? Do you like teasers? I hate them.
I'm indifferent, or I use the old agnostic toward them.
What you believe they exist? You just don't know anything about them.
Yes.
I don't know. I hate teaser trailers, and I think the what quintessentially describes a teaser trailer for me is back when the Flintstones came out in like the early 90s. The teaser trailer for that was literally just a bouncing ball on rock words, singing the song Flintstones, meet the Flintstones, blah, 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 blah. And then they have John Goodman walk out in his outfit and go yabba dabba doo. That was a teaser. I'm like, well, that's nothing.
Yeah.
That's a costume test. You know?
Why bother? No, I agree with you on that. I mean, and there's, I can understand having a teaser trailer when you're trying to build up interest for a film that's not
that
on anyone's
knows
radar.
About,
right?
Like The Dark Knight Rising that nobody heard.
But Dark Knight Rising, or the Amazing Spider-Man, that was much more of a short trailer.
That had more stuff in it, I will tell you.
Oh yeah, and all that was new. I mean, the problem I think with The Dark Knight Rises trailer is that you have dialogue. It's Liam Neeson's character from the first film going on, then. And most of the shots are from the first two films. Yeah. And you only have, what, two or three shots from the new film.
There's like one shot of him and Bane.
Right. Him backing up. There's like, I think, another shot of Bane, a character in the background. Who's that character? And that's it. And it really doesn't feel like much. And I wonder why they would even bother putting it out. Just because, I mean, I realized they were attaching it to Harry Potter. But again, how much recognition do you need, considering that the last one made over $500 million in the U.S.? I think people know it's coming and want to see it.
Well, and what's funny is my wife took my kids to go see Harry Potter, and she's like, "Oh, we saw the new Batman trailer." And I'm like, "Really? Did it just show the logo?" And she's like, "Oh no, they had footage from the movie." And then I went and watched it online. I told her, "I go, that wasn't footage from the movie. That was footage from the other movies."
Right.
And so I'm like, I said, "There's, you get more stuff in a fan cut trailer. You know, the fake Dark Knight Rises trailers, like the one with Robin Williams that's floating out there. You get more from that." And not accurately, but so the Dark Knight trailer dropped this week, and then you had the Amazing Spider-Man trailer. And you're right, the Amazing Spider-Man trailer has more going on in it. But it brings me to a sort of a, I guess I don't usually do talking points and discussion topics on the show, but I want to talk about this partly because this kind of emerged from a Twitter conversation I had with Chris from Lansing, who's called in the show before. I was bitching about them doing an origin story again for Spider-Man.
Yes.
And my whole thing was, I said, thank God I get to see him get bitten by the spider in this movie because I missed that 10 years ago.
It's been so long.
I didn't catch it, apparently. But yeah, here's the thing. What are your thoughts on origin stories? Because we talked about this a little bit with Captain America and Green Lantern, where you kind of need those for them and Thor. But again, Spider-Man, can't you just say Spider-Man? He's like a spider. Right. How much more explanation do you really need?
I almost, even though I don't think it was completely successful, but when they tried to reboot the Hulk, they didn't redo it as an origin story. They actually had the origin story compressed into the first 2 or 3 minutes. So it was basically the intro to the TV show. It felt very much like the TV show with him
actually,
on the run.
They were basing that on the TV show.
Right, right. It was sort of the homage to it. And even the equipment looked very much like it was a couple generations old. But I like that it was sort of paying homage to it. It was reminding you where he came from. It was a reboot, and you didn't need to go through that all over again. And you're right, with the main issue I have is just with the Amazing Spider-Man trailer and just the film, that it feels superfluous. I like Andrew Garfield. I think he's incredibly talented. My concern with him is that he's going to be sort of directed in one way, which is going to be toward doing Hollywood films, when I think he really just has an, you know, amazing depth and expressive range to do so much more. Yeah. And he may just not end up doing, you know, the better roles, like the Never Let Me Go, where I thought he was fantastic in, or Social Network, or yeah. I don't know if you saw the Red Riding trilogy.
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Which I highly recommend. It's, you know, three interrelated crime stories. And he's in the first segment. He plays a young reporter. And he's fantastic in that. It's like, I want to see him do more of those. But who knows? Yeah, we don't really need to see Spider-Man again. I don't know if you noticed they introduced his parents in this one.
Yeah, I watched the blurry bootleg. It was just the first thing I hit when I searched it. So I didn't get to see the high def version of it. But yeah, it's what worries me about it is origin stories. They just take forever, and then the story becomes about this person discovering they have powers.
Right.
And that's cool for a movie that nobody knows about. You know, if you're like when they're talking about doing, you know, any property that's not like one of the big ones, even Iron Man, you kind of have to do the origin. You have to say where the suit come from.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he was a second tier character, yeah. And the film and Robert Downey Jr. made him a first tier character. Yeah. So that was absolutely necessary.
Yeah, you have to do that because you have to know who these people are. But like I said, for the big ones, you know, Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, the Hulk. I mean, if it's high enough in people's awareness, and I think what they need to do, and this has been bothering me about the Spider-Man, this is the same problem I'm having with the Superman movie that's going to come out. They're going back to the origin. I'm like, do we really need to have another freaking origin? Good God, we had 10 freaking years of Smallville to give us the origin of Superman. Right. If you don't know the origin of Superman yet, it's not hard to do. Do it like the comics where you have, you know, what... Yes, they rehash the origin of Superman a lot in the comics, but they have what Action Comics went up to like 800 or something like
that? Yeah, and they're rebooting them starting soon, September.
Yeah, they're starting, but we're at least in the 800s at this point.
I think it's, the first one to cross that magic number.
Yeah, so 800 comics and probably less than 100 of them actually even mention the origin.
I'm sorry, I think Detective Comics got there first.
Detective slightly longer.
Yeah. Yes.
But the same thing, that, you know, they rehash the Bruce Wayne and his parents all the time in the Batman and Detective comics. But even then, it's not in every issue. You don't have to do it every 3 or 4 issues.
Right.
So that bothers me. Now, I had this is where the conversation went. And Chris from Lansing, he basically made a point. He's like, well, they've rebooted James Bond 6 times. And isn't it the same thing? I'm like, well, no, it's not. And it's hard to explain this in Twitter. So I'm going to kind of take my... I actually wish they would do the superhero movies like James Bond. Because if you look at how the James Bond series has gone, first of all, do you know what the first origin story of James Bond was? Casino Royale in 2006.
Yeah, absolutely, right. They didn't have to do one before.
Yeah, Doctor No, he was just an agent. And just, yeah. Hey, this is an agent. And he didn't have all the backstory from all the other movies because it was the first one, but Doctor No just dropped him in as an agent. There was no origin. And then when Lazenby took over, every time they've switched, almost every single time they've switched, they've made a point to at least play their hand to say, this is the same character and it's continuing. Now, granted, you know, James Bond isn't 100 years old and, you know, it doesn't all fit chronologically, but you forgive that because, you know, Batman's eternally 38 or however.
Right, right, yeah.
Bruce Wayne is.
And at this point, he's raised like 3 wards and you're like, wait a second. they're almost as old as he is at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So when they went to Lazenby, there's literally a scene in that where Lazenby's pulling out stuff from his desk that's from some of the old movies. That's to say to the audience, this is the same guy, maybe he got facial reconstruction. They even point that out in the behind the scenes of that movie. Then they go back, and of course they go, it's Diamonds Are Forever. So you had the return of Sean Connery. But again, it's continuous because he's trying to find Blofeld, who killed his wife. Then when they go to Roger Moore, they still are pointing out they still have M as the same character and Q is the same. So there's a continuity that goes all the way up through Bronson.
Right.
And yeah, they change M, but they didn't really, I guess when Bronson took over, it was a bit of a reboot because the last Dalton movie did so poorly.
Yeah.
And it was a big stretch of time. So that was a little bit of a reboot, but it still kind of existed in this continuous story, and then they just like replaced Q, and then in 2006 it was an honest to God reboot.
Yeah,
I wish they'd do that with just say, here's another Spider-Man story. We don't need to explain who Spider-Man is. You already know who he is. Go. And same thing with Superman. We know it's Superman. He lives in Metropolis. He has a suit. And yeah, it just we're wasting our time with these origin stories because again, like I said, it turns into this story. It's like going back to the Bond example. Part of what was brilliant about Casino Royale is it showed him going from sort of like this younger, sort of wet behind the ears spy who still had compassion to becoming the hardcore badass that James Bond really is.
Yeah, and a hardcore killer, yeah.
Yeah. You don't need to go through that arc every single movie. No. Or every other movie.
Although it was definitely, even though, you know, you could argue, and I think you should, that Batman is on the same level as those two characters, if not even higher up. But you needed that fresh start. It was absolutely vitally necessary to have a fresh start with Batman Begins.
Well,
yeah, tell the origin story. Just be, you know, I mean,
there's such shit with Batman and Robin.
Right, the previous one was so bad, and they had gotten so campy by then that they had distorted what the Batman character was originally, and so redoing it, fresh start, letting audiences know, and I think there was a lot of sourness there too from audiences that we want nothing to do with this Batman character. So I think in that case, but you had sort of a aesthetic, artistic failure. I don't know, commercially, it probably did poorly or relative to the others. So you needed to reboot it.
Well, and
but with Spider-Man, you didn't, because the last one did incredibly well, even though it wasn't as strong
as.
It's
not as good as the other ones, but it wasn't Batman and Robin.
Right, and it was still a commercial hit.
Yeah.
So enough people saw it, so that they didn't. There's not a lot of bad will involved.
Yeah, a lot of people would be like, oh, that last Spider-Man movie sucked. But you could just do another Spider-Man movie and just have it exist in a similar universe. Or like when Batman... Here's the thing. This is the other thing that I know is going to happen. This, after The Dark Knight Rises comes out, however well it does, whether it does better than The Dark Knight, which it won't, or whether it does... or if it bombs, say it bombs, or whatever, no matter what. What they're going to do, they're going to do another Batman movie in 4 or 5 years after that. And they're going to give it to another director, and they're going to reboot the story, and they're going to start back with the whole thing of, let's tell the origin of Bruce Wayne. I'm just like, just do a Batman movie.
Yeah.
Just give me a good action movie. That's right. Like Transformers, again, they're going to, and because you can apply this to any franchise. Transformers, Michael Bay's done his 3 Transformers. They're going to make another Transformers, and it's going to be directed by Mick G or somebody like that.
Oh, God.
Or Brett Ratner. And they're going to, like, do the origin of the... And just, like, you know what? Just be, like, they're big fucking robots that blow things up. Boom.
Well, considering that the second and the third ones are essentially remakes of the first one anyway, the structures are almost identical.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just keep doing that with new characters, you know?
Transformers 4, we found something else on the moon.
Right.
We found another artifact.
Yeah, how many of these are they going to find, you know?
Yeah.
Before Optimus Prime just stops getting up, you know, he's always upset. You held us against us. Why didn't you tell us? Wait.
Be like, we found the Tang that the Decepticons drank in 1968.
Say, your electric truth toothbrush was left on the moon.
There we go. I hope, Chris, if you're listening, I hope you are. That's my explanation of why it's for it to be a reboot. It needs to do that origin. It needs to start everything over again. And the Bond movies continued it, and they only rebooted in 2006. And that's why I think the Bond movies are so successful, because they told spy stories. They didn't tell a James Bond story. So, you ready to do a Fat Guy 5?
Yes. Let's go for it. Let's jump into it.
This is inspired. This is the one we've done so many superhero Fat Guy 5s over the years, because there's just a lot of lists that you can make about superheroes and a lot of superhero movies. So we finally found something. These are five actors who should never play superheroes. And it's funny, because when Chris Evans was chosen to play Captain America, people were like, is he going to pull it off? Because you always get that. You always get that with, is he going to pull it off? Is Ryan Reynolds going to pull off Green Lantern? Is this big mouth dude from Star Trek going to be able to pull off Thor? You know, Michael Keaton, is he going to be able to pull off Batman?
Well, yeah, there was a huge backlash against Michael Keaton because of his comedic, the types of roles that he did before.
Yeah. Well, and he's also, I feel like I could beat up Michael Keaton, and I'm not in good shape.
Well, I think he's sort of on the shorter side and just physically slight.
Yeah.
So there was
I think Christian Bale would beat the shit out of me.
And I don't think he's that tall either, though. And he's relatively lean. But I think
he could still beat the shit out of me.
I think he has that anger element going for him.
I could burp on Michael Keaton and it would knock him over. that's just speculation on my part, though. I haven't tested it in the field.
But you're right that there's always that element when an actor is announced. You know, everyone has their favorites that they want to see in that particular role. I think with Chris Evans, the two major negatives were that he was already in a superhero, two of them,
yeah,
in the Fantastic Four, and also that the characters he's played there and in other movies didn't seem suited to Captain America, because he's such a, you know, wisecracking ass, smug
in everything he does. Yeah.
Right, and I thought he did. Particularly well. Captain.
Pull it off, yeah.
Yeah.
This would have been like Nicolas Cage playing Superman. That's like the actors who should never play superheroes.
That would have been so weird. That would have been... I would have paid good money to see that, yes.
It would have been so 90s.
Did you ever see some of the production art, the costumes that they were thinking of doing? Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad that didn't happen.
I am glad and just saddened at the same time that it didn't happen, because it would have been a glorious mess.
Failure of Dune-like proportions.
I like Dune.
Awesome. I do too, but it's not a good film. Yeah. Production design, yes. Huge fan of what Lord of the Rings was to a lot of people growing up. Dune and that Dune series up until like 4 or 5 was for me.
Yeah.
So I was eager to see the first Dune, and
I liked the movie.
Hoped for sequels before I saw it, of course.
You didn't get those.
Yes. All right,
let's go through the Fat Guy 5. I'm going to take the first one, Andy Dick. I couldn't even imagine what character he would play. But it would be a bad superhero movie.
The Whiner?
Yeah. Well, he could do like, you could bring him in and like, it would be great to just like make him like Bruce Banner. Like a really, really gay Bruce Banner.
And then his superhero alter ego is just a CG character. Yes,
he'd be like a possum or something like that, like an animated possum. He turns into animated possum when he gets angry. Do you want to do the next one?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Steven Seagal, one of my favorite actors of all time, and I am being absolutely sarcastic. The high point of my viewing experience related to Steven Seagal is, of course, Executive Decision.
Executive Decision, where he gets like wiped out.
45 minutes in.
That's awesome.
I love that film in part because it sort of plays the psycho card. That he's the first character you meet. You think he's the hero. he pretends to be the hero. He's a leader of, you know, this super, you know, Army Rangers or whatever they are, you know, and he doesn't make it. Kurt Russell ends up being the hero, who I think is the better actor. By far.
Defuses the bomb.
Yeah. But that film actually had a great cast.
It did have
as far as like all the secondary supporting, John Leguizamo and Joe Morton and like you said, Oliver Platt, B.D. Wong.
Fuses a bomb with a coffee stirrer.
Yes.
Steven Seagal. He is so fat
and slow and runs like a girl.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's just. Now I understand. He's like at one point he was a martial arts wizard, but. I mean, it's like I remember watching Half Past Dead, which was that was literally the first movie I ever saw at a screening to review. Very first movie. And he's like doing martial arts. He's got like a ham hock in his hand. He's eating it. You know, I mean, the reason he wears those, like, what are those big long martial arts coats or the Asian style of jacket? What are those called? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
He wears those because his belly shows. If he shows anything else,
right? It's meant to cover his.
Yeah, and he walks where he looks like a giant traffic.
Oops. Sorry. Whoops. What's that? What was that? Sorry.
You okay? No, that's okay. Glitch happens. I can still hear you.
I apologize for that.
No, that's cool. I didn't hear anything. Steven Seagal would not make a good superhero. I mean, could you just imagine? They should just make him be like, and they should make him go ridiculous. Like, do Andy Dick as Batman, and Steven Seagal as Robin.
I might pay maybe not good money, but I might pay a couple bucks to see
that. I would pay a couple bucks to watch Steven Seagal action sequence in the Robin outfit from the old TV show. Has to be the old TV show. None of that bullshit from Batman and Robin. Not Baskin and Robbins, Batman.
or Baskin and Robbins meets Batman and Robin.
He would be eating Baskin and Robbins. He'd be like, hold on a second, I'm eating some mint chocolate chip. The next one on the list is DJ Qualls. If you don't know who he is, he's the skinny guy.
He's a super skinny guy.
Super duper skinny, ugly dude. And you said he was what, Memphis Beat?
Yeah, he plays a cop of some kind.
That's a surprise.
Well, he's comic relief. He's a comic relief cop. You know, he's a stumbler, bumbler, fumbler type character.
Yeah.
So, it's not a very good show, actually.
He would not make a good superhero.
No. If he can't play a cop, you know.
No.
But he's getting some work. He's getting some work.
He's got plenty of work. If you want the creepy, weird, dorky, skinny dude.
And didn't he play? Yeah, he was on one of the Law and Order Criminal Intents, I think.
Was he?
Yes.
Was he a rapist?
No, I think he played an emotionally unstable hacker, computer programmer.
Of course.
He accused of murder.
He walks right out of the movie The Core and then gets a job on Law and Order because he played a hacker. He hacked the planet. So that was his
right.
You want me to hack the planet?
Yeah. That was a fun movie.
I did like that. My favorite part of that movie was Stanley Tucci, who does a good job in Captain America, by the way. And he's narrating into the tape recorder as the ship's going to blow up. Right. It's like, why am I recording this? He finally realizes how stupid it is that he's actually recording something in a doomed ship. The next one on the list, you want to take this one?
Roseanne Barr.
No, Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, I get them mixed up.
Although Roseanne Barr would be equally inappropriate.
I'm not sure why I read that.
As She-Hulk.
They could be She-Hulks together.
They could be like
and Mud Wrestle. And Mud Wrestle. No.
Wondrous Woman.
Could you imagine? No, I'd rather not imagine.
I don't want to imagine. I would be flaccid for months if I imagine that.
Months? Years? Yeah, years. Rosie O'Donnell.
Have some quality car. Years.
I don't know if you remember this. Wasn't she in a movie? What was the title?
Exit to Eden.
Yeah, Exit to Eden. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't she like in like fetish wear, leather corset or something?
Well, and you know what's up? It's good. And you know who else was in that too? Because you sit there and say, if I'm going to have people dressed up in leather, tight leather fetish stuff, it's going to be Rosie O'Donnell and Dan Aykroyd. Because he was her sidekick in that movie.
Oh, my God, yes.
Right? True story on that. Actually, I actually heard her before she went completely insane. And she sort of pulled like a slow burn Charlie Sheen. But beforehand, when she was like actually somewhat cognizant, she was telling the story that they shot the movie and she lost weight to do the movie because, of course, she was much larger. She lost weight because she knew she was going to be in leather. And they wrapped. And then she gained some weight back. And they come back and they're like, we need to do reshoots. And she's like, I'm 30 pounds heavier. It's going to show.
Right.
And so if you watch the movie, there are shots where she's noticeably fatter, just shot to shot, because they had to do reshoots. It's sort of like Melanie Griffith's breasts in Bonfire of the Vanities.
Which I've only seen once, so I don't recall what her
apparently breasts. She did, but they shot in New York and they shot in L.A. And between the shoots, she got a boob job.
Oh, that's not good. Yes.
That's completely stupid. And she looks awful now. So
yeah.
Don Johnson had her when she was good.
And Antonio Banderas and her are still together, right?
That's so sweet and horrifying.
Yeah. I remember he left his first wife for her, and his very Catholic mother was very upset.
Well, that's what happens. Hollywood.
Yes.
Friends with benefits. the last one, George Clooney. Oh, wait.
He's a god among men.
He already did a superhero movie and was awful.
But everyone was awful in that movie. Everyone.
Yeah. And there's nobody who was good in that movie. Even like good actors.
Oh, like Arnold? Like Arnold?
I mean, like Pat Hingle or something like that, who actually had a career as a character actor for years. Just
Pat Hingle was in that?
He played Commissioner Gordon.
Oh, right. I've tried to block that movie out, even though I think
Michael Goh was in that movie, and he was terrible. Alicia Silverstone. Of course, I wouldn't.
That was her downfall, right? Yes. Did she do anything after that? Is she still around?
She's still, no, she went to the moon.
She quit acting, or acting quit her. One of those two.
I don't know. I mean, she's didn't she host something on the Style Network or something?
Oh, that's horrible. Yes.
I don't know.
I saw Jewel on something recently. What is that? It was like some music show.
Jewel? You mean like, you know, Snaggletooth?
Yes. As in Ride to the Devil, Jewel. Yes.
Wow.
She was in one of those. You know, by the end of it, you get a record contract and sell your life.
Oh, God.
A bunch of, you know,
reality shows.
Yeah, it's a reality show, a bunch of musicians who get together. I'm sure it's on the Bravo network. Everything's on
I'm sure it's on some basic cable network that gets 15,000 viewers an episode.
She looked good, though. All right. You probably don't want to
hear does look good. She's got fantastic boobs.
And everything else.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's not an ugly girl as long as she's not smiling in the right angle. I have a real problem with teeth, you know, like Katherine Heigl, you know, who's the other one? There's somebody else who has got nasty, gnarly teeth. Oh, what's her name from Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man series?
Oh, Kirsten Dunst. Didn't she? Yeah. But I think she got work done afterward. No?
So did Katherine Heigl. What's funny is Katherine Heigl got them straightened just a little bit. So they're not so. She sort of did the Steve Buscemi thing where they still are there to give her that characteristic imperfection. But not as crazy as
because yeah, these days you can do the Invisalign thing, so at least you're not wearing braces, right, or something.
Yeah. And look what it's done for her career. She's done Killers, and I think as we know it.
Is she done? Is she done yet?
Katherine Heigl? I don't know. The Onion had that great story about too many Katherine Heigl movies and releasing all at once. Did you ever see that episode?
I don't think so. No.
Oh, it's funny. Well, I'll show it to you at the break or something, because we got to go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about DVDs.
Awesome.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are here to talk about DVDs, but I mean, we had talked about, you know, oh, gosh, a whole bunch of things. We talked about teaser trailers, superheroes, origin stories, Rosie O'Donnell as She-Hulk. A whole bunch of different things. But what do we got going on right now? What's next? What's next? What do we have in the next?
DVD scene? Roundup, yes.
That's right. I had to do that sound. I didn't prep you for it. So
oh, that's okay.
It's late as we're recording, because and we're all suffering because we aren't at Comic-Con. Even though, like you said, we're safe from crowds. Because it's crowded.
Smelly crowd.
smelly crowd. I was at Comic-Con in 2008, and we were in the trade show floor, the dealer's floor, and I almost had a panic attack. And I don't get panic attacks, and I don't freak out at crowds, but I kind of was just like, I have to get out of here.
Oh no, I've had that experience at WonderCon on the trade floor, the same thing, where it's just wall to wall people, you can't get through.
Yeah,
nothing's moving.
Yeah, we did some interviews in one of the booths with Cal Penn and John Cho for Harold and Kumar. That was fine because we were sort of in the booth, and we're fine because we're in the New Line booths and we were, you know, away. But it was just in this massive group of people, and I'm just like, I have to get out of here. So
I think it's just that part where you realize I want to get out or have to, and I can't. That's when the panic starts to set in.
I like people, but I don't like that many people.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyways, talk about DVDs. What's your DVDs that you're going to recommend, or DVD?
Well, I think you said you already talked about Rango, but that did come out last Friday, and I did pick it up.
Drake last week talked about Rango, yeah.
And there's there's an extended version, which I actually haven't seen. I think it has an extra 4 or 5 minutes of footage, which is pretty rare.
Watch those extended versions, because some of them are like, if you ever notice, sometimes you look at the running time, it doesn't change. You're like, that's right. Not extended.
Well, luckily, this had a four-minute 147 versus 152, I think.
Makes me wonder what they took out. I mean, was it like, this was the R-rated scene,
right? For an animated film, yes.
Rango unrated.
But what I did watch just to make sure that the DVD was fine, because someone on Twitter, Drew McQueen, mentioned that there were problems with his Blu-ray, and he wasn't sure if it was the batch that he had. Or that he bought his from, or whether they were all bad. So once I threw it in, I had to start watching, and I watched most of it, and it looked fantastic. Just the quality of the Blu-ray, just the story, Chinatown meets Once Upon a Time in the West, all the homage, but the lighting in that, you know, just fantastic. Oh,
it's a brilliantly made movie. It's really not for kids as much as it is for adults.
No. Some of the humor is actually incredibly dark and bizarre. Yeah. So, but I loved it. It's one of my top 5 films of the year so far.
Cool.
So
also what came out on Friday was Arthur, which, you know, I was watching that again, and I found it a little cuter than I wasn't wild about it in the theater, but I really actually thought it was kind of cute. Some of the non sequitur weird stuff that he says, I thought actually kind of worked.
I wasn't one of the haters. Yeah. There seemed to be a lot of people who hated it. I just wasn't different to it by the end of
the original movie. Wasn't that good?
It wasn't. No, and it was of its time, and you know, it romanticizes a drunk, an immature drunk, right? I was like, come on. So they had to really downplay that to some extent.
Well, I think it's funny that Russell Brand has made a career out of being a reformed drug addict playing people with substance abuse problems.
True, and the plus side of with the film, Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, she's adorable in this. She movie. Way is, better than she was in Greenberg.
Yes, well, Greenberg I had a lot of problems with, but that's...
Also, we have Take Me Home Tonight, starring that 70s show alum, Topher Grace.
The great underrated Topher Grace.
Which actually is not a bad little movie. It's an 80s nostalgia movie, so it's not bad. There's also Limitless with Bradley Cooper, which is surprisingly fantastic. Compared to what I thought it would be when I saw the trailers.
Surprisingly course, fantastic. Okay.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. Definitely check it out.
Oh, no, I've enjoyed it. I saw it. I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't call it fantastic. And I thought a lot of it had to do with him. I mean, he was still playing kind of the smug bastard he's played in other films.
Yeah.
But I liked his character arc, and I liked that they didn't pull any punches at the end of the film. I was expecting sort of the big redemption arc for the character.
Yeah.
And he doesn't quite get there, and I like that. That was actually a plus. And some of the shooting style, the gimmicks, again, some people really had problems with that. I like that the director was trying to change things up a bit. So,
yeah, there's also, but my pick of the week is Doctor Who season 6.1, the first half of the season 6. It's fantastic. New Doctor Who's great. Matt Smith's awesome. Karen Gillan is adorable. Stinker of the week is The Girl Next Door season 6. The Girls Next Door season 6, because, you know, gosh, these buxom blonde bimbos just don't quite hold up to the other buxom blonde bimbos.
What is Girls Next Door?
You got to Google it. We got about a minute left.
Okay, sorry.
It's Hugh Hefner and his girlfriend's living in the Playboy Mansion. It's stupid.
Okay. Yeah, no thanks. I'll pass.
Review wrap up. We got Captain America, which we both said, well, you said rocked, and I said kind of rocked. Friends with Benefits, which we couldn't render a grade on. And then next week, we've got Cowboys and Aliens, The Smurfs in 3D, and Crazy Stupid Love. Again, you can find us at fatguysofthemovies.com or, check us out on iTunes. Now, Mel, tell us where you're from real quick. We got about 30 seconds.
E-Film Critic, SF Station, veryaware.com, formerly Cinematical, and Movie Vault. So you can find me in one of those places. And by the way, lots of places. I'm really looking forward to the Smurfs in 3D.
Lurking on the internet. He will be lurking at a theater near you for Smurfs 3D. Thank you, Mel, for doing this on the Comic-Con week. And
my pleasure.
We will see you guys next week.
Great.